Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Red, White, and Rude. I am William Del Pilar, a rare breed, a conservative Latino. But I'm happy to report we as a species are now growing and reproducing like never before. This is where I talk about the intersectionality of culture and politics. And today we're talking Hollywood and why big tent movies are failing. Then conservatives are using leftist tactics, but legally, to push back. Their target, Jimmy Kimmel. And never forget, woke is dead. Not. Woke is not dead and never will be. And we're going to talk about transgenders on the runway with Victoria's Secret. Then we'll get into some updates concerning late night hosts possibly doubling down, Paramount and woke employees, and Sydney Sweeney campaign numbers are out. But before we begin, make sure you give this podcast a thumbs up as you're watching, and bookmark grimleysmedia.com. You can find more and different podcasts. We have quite a diversity of them, as well as content, and check out our swag on there. We have some cool mugs, hats, and shirts, especially for my brethren, conservative Latinos. Please please, I'm asking you to support our all-volunteer organization here. So make sure you also follow us on your favorite platform. We're on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, Pandora under the handle Grumblings Media. We're small but smart, and we're slowly growing with your support. So please keep that up and spread the word. And with that out of the way, let's get rude. Hollywood's $600 million problem. Franchises flop. Disney bleeds. And the audience walks. So look, Hollywood's biggest franchises, as most conservatives know, have always been flops. But this year, they were supposed to carry the summer. Instead, they lived through it. They were overhyped, over-budgeted, and they underwhelmed. Look, the audience didn't just skip a few titles. We walked away from the big tent Hollywood model itself. The Fantastic Four First Steps, global box office, $508 million. It cost $300 million. You use a 2.6 multiplier, it needed $780 million to break even. That's a financial loss at the theaters. It may or may not make it up through streaming, purchases, rentals, etc. Jurassic World Rebirth, that got horrific reviews. Global box office, $856 million. Now, that cost $325 million, so it needed approximately $845 million to break even. It is what you call barely profitable. And when you put this much money into big tent movies, that's a big negative. These are the type of movies they expect to blow up and go over the top. Then we have every what used to be everyone's favorite man in tights, and that is Superman. Global box office, $612 million. It did not even beat The Man of Steel, which was Henry Cavill's last movie. His first Superman movie, I believe. So this one, again, $612 million, it cost $325 million to make. So it needed about $845 million, which means it lost money. Despite strong reviews, every wokester out there wanted it to succeed. Why? Well, it was a James Gunn production. And James Gunn is an accepted hardcore leftist who at one time was fired and canceled because of allegations of being a pedophile with some of his Twitter posts. At the time, they were canceling anybody who made a joke. Well, because of the success of Guardians of the Galaxy, Disney's like, we don't care if he is or isn't. And I'm just speculating based off the left's own rules. When you post something, that's who and what you are. That's how they try to paint everybody. But Disney said, screw that. You did a great job on Guardians of the Galaxy. And that did blow up. And Warner Brothers brought him over. He's probably earning a couple hundred million or so with a big contract. Maybe I'm exaggerating. He's probably earning tens of millions with a big contract to lead the revamped DC universe. So again, Superman. Cost $325 million and needed $845 million. That's a loss. Now, they're disputing some of the numbers, saying, oh, it did well, it did this. When you put down the production cost, you use tried and true formula that Hollywood has come out with. then it did not make the money needed to be the blockbuster. So let's say it did break even. That's not what you want at the movie that's supposed to relaunch the DC Universe. And then we learned that Pedro Pascal, a woke bigot, and yes, that's what he is, a bigot. He was in the Fantastic Four, Eddington, and Materialist. Two of those movies tanked. One was a mediocre hit. We're done with him. We're done with him. Get him out of here. And then the previous year, he was in Gladiator 2, which was another mediocrity financially, and it was a terrible movie. Come on. The Colosseum and sharks, please. Ridley Scott, I think at your age, 81 or however old you are, your time has come and gone. Great at one time, not even a shadow of yourself, an embarrassment of yourself. Pedro Pascal, get him out of here. Horrors and thrillers, that's what kept theaters alive. There were quite a few that were big hits while the tentpoles collapsed. Now, the media blames franchise fatigue. But what they're doing is they're sidestepping deeper brand and cultural rejection. So a lot of the stuff I got from Park Place, Forbes, Breitbart, you know, one hardcore leftist outlet, one deep conservative, and the other one middle of the ground leans more right than not. So, but Forbes reports Marvel is losing about $620 million per film on average. So the Thunderbolts made $382 million. Disney's cut $191 million. Fantastic Four, $508 million. Disney's cut $254. Both failed to recoup $300 million plus production and marketing costs. I don't know how Disney stays in business. So what are the drivers of collapse per the media? Well, they say streaming fatigue from too many Disney Plus tie-ins. They say there's continuity confusion across multiverse arcs. On Warner Brothers, hey, there's just too many superhero movies and Marvel's killing us with some bad movies and we're being tied into those bad movies. Then there's also the audience misfire. Disney pivoted the Marvel Comics universe towards kids and progressive messaging with transgenderism, lesbianism, gayism, the LGBTQ plus, in essence, and away from their demographic market, which is young adult men and older people who loved the comics growing up, as well as younger kids. The actual kids were actually going to Super Mario Brothers. So the core young and older fans, they left the Marvel Universe. So what am I saying here? I'm saying so Disney pivoted to trying to make the Marvel Comics universe more for younger kids. But the problem is they have the continuity confusion. It's tough to follow. And their audience were actually young males and young adults and adults who grew up loving these characters. So the kids actually went towards Super Mario Brothers type movies versus the Marvel Comics universe. And that meant you alienated your actual core audience and they abandoned the brand. Cultural messaging, that's the real story. That replaced escapism and it turned off every core fan they had. It turned me off. I didn't even watch Avengers Endgame. I didn't even watch the third Star Wars, that of the trilogy, the new one. That's how bad they were. I grew up with Indiana Jones. I didn't even bother to waste my time with that nonsense they threw out a couple years ago. And Snow White, please. I had more fun laughing at the hair on Rachel Ziegler's back than even considering going to see that movie. Now there's a potential catastrophe that could happen, and that is Avengers Doomsday. It's rumored to be one of the most expensive films ever made. Talk about catastrophic failure. We're done with Marvel. They don't understand their movies are costing too much and there's no audience for them because they've run their audience off. The movies are no longer fun escapism. They're perverted indoctrination tales of you bad if you're Anglo or man. and you better support this crap we're shoving down your throat. The thing about America is we respond with our wallets and we stayed home. And it has nothing to do with race. It's being shoved equity down that is against every core American value we have of meritocracy, the land of opportunity. If this country's so bad, why does every damn immigrant or outsider want to come here to live and work? Things that make you go, great song from the 90s. So let's talk about a few more failures. It just came out on the Little Mermaid 2023. It costs $520 million to make that through reshoots, through rewrites, through everything. It just went wrong. So it needed $1.35 billion to break even. It grossed $570 million. That's a massive loss. This news just came out. I want to say this past week or this past month is when I found it. Think about that. Everything went wrong with that. The writing, the storyline, using the left and what they always shove down our throats, cultural appropriation. Nobody would have cared had they not tried to force indoctrinate us into this. But worse, by stating one race is completely bad, vile, and evil. There's backlash, and Disney paid the price. There are other misfires. Mufasa. That was a $250 million budget, and it had soft returns. It barely broke even at that. Then the Haunted Mansion, $150 million budget, $115 million gross. Big loss. Strange World, $180 million budget, $73 million gross. Big loss. Indiana Jones, $300 million budget, $384 million gross. Massive loss. And what made that worse? They made Indiana Jones impotent, then chastised him for being Indiana Jones, then force-fed us a woman nobody wanted to see, nobody cared for. And then this woman, this actress, I forget her name, went on to sign an Amazon deal, the create stuff for that $100 million later, zero concepts given to them. Then they were looking to extend her contract, or they may have. We live in a woke, degenerate world. How does Amazon survive something like that? It's easy how they survive, but $100 million write-off given to somebody for doing nothing? And Disney with all these blockbuster losses? And obviously we all love and remember Snow White. There was more interest in Rachel Ziegler back in those hairs than there was in the movie. Snow White, $200 to $300 million budget, $208 million gross. Massive loss. So each failed to justify its cost, and it exposes a pattern of blockbuster overspending and audience rejection. Now, as a conservative, I believe this collapse is twofold. It's economic and ideological. Economic is what I just talked about, the bloated production costs, inflated salaries, and marketing excess that make profitability nearly impossible to gain. Now, I firmly believe, as most of you listening do, it's ideological. Studios are pushing identity first, storytelling last. And the storytelling they push, first and foremost, is indoctrination of woke nonsense. Well, not nonsense, it's deadly. Woke storytelling that destroys the fabric of American values. Then they rewrite characters to elevate one race and culture by demeaning another. Warner Brothers did that with the Blue Beetle, and I'm Latino, but I'm sick and tired. Yes, I don't have the traditional brown skin that my cousins do. I'm not an Afro-Caribbean like my grandmother is. I don't have the Asian look like my older brother does, whose family is from Hiroshima. I'm sorry, Nagasaki, where he lost his family with the second bombing. Oh, yes, the big one. So, I have none of that, but I am related by all of that. And when you see our family snapshot, you go, oh, who's those group of friends? Know that we're all blood family. And I tell you, as a Latino in the Blue Beetle, I was just sick of it. Y'all making all the whiteies all racist, bigot, stupid, ignorant, with Sigourney Weaver and Jorge Lopez, a disgusting excuse for a human being, for a Latino.
And guess what? It took a white woman to save his ass.
Go figure. The culture he now hates, that's what saved him. And my point is, in the Blue Beetle, that's what that was all about. It's this ideological push, studios pushing identity first, indoctrinated storytelling, rewriting characters that elevate one race and culture by demeaning another. This is reminiscent of Jim Crow laws that demeaned one culture in lieu of another. It fuels resentment, not unity. Thomas Sewell warned, demonizing a group in the name of justice breeds division. Disney has replaced beloved heroes with what? Progressive sermonizing. And we as an audience tuned out. I remember it was the back end of the 1970s. Seeing Star Wars, seeing a few, like I think Peter Parker was on. And I was thinking, man, wait till technology catches up. You're going to see all these superhero movies being made. I was a kid, probably preteen at that time, or teen, entering my teens. I never saw them destroying these beloved heroic figures. Disney replaced beloved heroes with progressive sermonizing. And you, I, and a lot of America and the world has tuned out. Now, the media outlets, again, they blame franchise fatigue and platform confusion to avoid confronting the cultural rejection. We must stop this woke hatred and bigotry and unify as Americans. I didn't care that Captain America was black at one time. I used to collect them. I remember those issues. We all loved the Black Panther. Why? He was honorable. He was full of goodness. He's what we aspire to be as human beings. We loved about Peter Parker that we could relate to him. We loved Superman, how he was all for goodness and against evil. Now, I'm not going to say their colors didn't matter. Innately, it matters because we have something called homophily, where you gravitate to your own kind. That's human nature. But as Americans being brought up with these values, we didn't care from that perspective. We love T'Challa. But let me tell you this. If you're going to sit there and make something Latino, black, or Asian that is supposed to be white, then why are you getting mad if an Anglo does the same with a different culture? It's hypocrisy or hypocritical when you do. Look, Hollywood isn't just collapsing. It's cannibalizing itself. Bloated production budgets, inflated salaries, and marketing excess have made profitability nearly impossible. But the deeper rot is ideological. In the name of equity, studios now rewrite characters that elevate that culture over another culture. And again, this is reminiscent of Jim Crow laws, meant to demean one culture in lieu of another. In this case, demean and hurt and keep in their place black culture over Anglo culture. And that was produced by the Democrats. And what did that do? Fuel resentment. It gave us the civil rights movement. It didn't give us any unity. So when you're doing it now in the present and flipping the table, it's not going to bring us together. It's going to create more division and resentment. Thomas Sowell warned about this. Human nature doesn't respond to force guilt or acceptance with grace. It responds with backlash. Disney's collapse isn't an outlier. It's a symptom. And let me backtrack. It's not just Disney, Warner Brothers. Hollywood's collapse isn't an outlier. It's a symptom. And until Hollywood celebrates both its messaging and economics, when Hollywood recalibrates both its messaging and its economics, then we'll come back. Until then, audiences will keep walking. All right, let's do a little promotion here. I've got my marching orders from the band, and this is our cup. This is a classic Grumbly's coffee mug, which I have here. I love it. It's a 15-ounce mug. This is varsity mode, not JV mode. Varsity, 15 ounce. Look, you can swipe the QR code there. It'll take you to our store. I ask of you, please support our all-volunteer organization here. Nobody's making a dime. In fact, my partner and I have put thousands into this project. I don't say that proudly. I say that, support us. or you can go to grumliesmedia.com and purchase a cup there. And we have T-shirts and we have hats as well. Okay, let's move on here. I'll keep that up for a couple of minutes. The FCC complaint targets Jimmy Kimmel. The watchdog says ABC violated broadcast law with undisclosed political advocacy. So a conservative watchdog group says that Jimmy Kimmel isn't just cracking jokes. He's breaking federal law. How? He's using ABC's airwaves to push Democrat candidates that he financially supports without disclosing it to viewers. And that's what he's done. I never really cared. Free speech. But there are laws we must follow. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. You know what cracks me up? I just heard it the other day. I heard it on it leans conservative, but they have Democrats on there. And then I heard it on a libertarian podcast. They're hypocrites. Oh, Lisa cooked this, Lisa cooked that, this, that. But they were the exact opposite when Trump was prosecuted. They weren't defending him. In fact, one person sat there and said, well, they need to know how to politically or how to prosecute him. The guy wasn't even a lawyer. I'm like, what the hell? You stay at a Holiday Inn? All of a sudden, your jury, your executioner? The hypocrisy is beyond compare. Now, what's the difference here? They're using legalese to make him conform to the law. So what happened? The Center for American Rights filed an FCC complaint against ABC's Jimmy Kimmel Live. Kimmel's platform is accused of functioning as a partisan pipeline under the guise of entertainment. Now, they accuse Kimmel of, quote, unlawful politicking, unquote. Why? He's promoting Democrat politicians, the ones he's donated to, and he's not disclosing those ties. So Daniel Suhr, the group's president, he said Kimmel is, quote, perhaps the worst offender, unquote, among late night hosts. I'm sure Colbert will likely be targeted as well. So the complaint cites softball interviews with Democrat candidates Kimmel has fundraised for, and he calls that a conflict of interest. I like this. So the Media Research Center, that their data shows that 99% of late night guests is what you see on late night television. I'm sorry, late night Democrat guests. 99% of late night guests are Democrats. 30 elected Democrats appeared on shows, zero Republicans. Some Democrats, like Cory Booker, he just got married. I thought he was gay, to be quite honest. I don't know. I guess I'm wrong. Or he just got engaged. Again, I thought he was gay. I mean, I don't care, but I just thought. But then again, he wants to run for POTUS, and appearances is everything. Being married is much more acceptable than being single. But anyway, back to this. So some Democrats like Booker and Tammy Duckworth appeared multiple times, as has Kamala Harris. Out of 77 non-elected guests, only one was conservative. And FCC rules prohibit undisclosed political advocacy on public airwaves. So what's the legal basis for all this? Well, broadcasters are required to disclose financial or political ties when public airwaves are used for advocacy. And a complaint argues ABC violated federal broadcast law by failing to disclose Kimmel's donations while airing political interviews. And if proven, this would constitute a breach of FCC conflict of interest and public interest obligations. What are some of the penalties? Fines up to $50,000 per incident. I'd love to see that. You're talking millions. It's which is dropping the bucket for these broadcasts, but man, they're paying millions out here, there, everywhere. What was it? 100? So was that 5 million? Let's see, 5 million. Let's see, about 5 million. Per incident, per sponsorship and disclosure failures, 50,000 per incident. So the license review or revocation proceedings are also a possible penalty. And that's for systemic or intentional violations, which with Kimmel, that's clear as day. Mandated on-air corrections and public file updates. Could you imagine Kimmel being forced to bring conservatives on? Additional fines for public file noncompliance, a potential referral to the DOJ for civil enforcement. This is serious stuff, and I love how they're doing it. They're doing it legally because, my friends, I don't give a rat's tail
about free speech, free speech.
There's laws you have to follow. Now, you may disagree with those laws and then go talk to your congressman or senator. Get him to change it. But until then, laws have to be followed. And I'm sick and tired of these free speech advocates who demand and demand until it's used against them. And I don't care if you're Democrat, Rhino, Libertarian, all y'all the worst offenders. This isn't comedy, what Kimmel is doing. It's campaign coordination. Call it entertainment, late night. So Kimmel's show operates like a Democrat PR machine. It bypasses disclosure laws and exploits broadcast privileges. Now that's alleged. We'll find out if it's legally seen that way. So while most would assume ABC profits off partisan messaging like this, while silencing our side conservative, they're likely hemorrhaging money as Colbert shows does. The FCC complaint exposes how legacy media can shield its political operatives behind celebrity status, allegedly. Now, conservatives aren't asking for censorship. We're demanding accountability, and we'd like equal access to some of these public platforms. So Jimmy Kimmel is now in the FCC's crosshairs. People are going to ask why. Well, he's not just telling jokes. He's telling voters who to support. Well, likely hiding his financial ties that support those candidates. So the FCC complaint pulls back the curtain on what I call a media ecosystem that rewards partisan loyalty and ignores or denigrates dissent. Now, regardless of where we stand with free speech, again, there are legal rules, regulations to follow here. So when broadcast networks become campaign arms for one party, and we've seen this since the turn of the century, it's not just unethical, it now may be unlawful. Conservatives have long warned, I've warned, we've all warned that late night TV is nothing but a one-sided echo chamber. Now there's a potential paper trail. If the FCC doesn't act, it's sending the message that the rules don't apply if you lean left. And that's not comedy, that's corruption. All right, a quick update here. The Hollywood Press tells hosts to double down on the very thing driving viewers away. So the Hollywood Press isn't asking late night hosts to fix the format after Stephen Colbert's late show was canceled. They're telling them double down on the politics that broke late night. The trade site Late Nighter urged Colbert, Kimmel, and others to lean harder into political content, to adapt to digital platforms. To rehash it real quick, CBS said they're canceling the late show with Stephen Colbert at the end of May because of massively declining ad revenues, economic shifts, and the fact it was losing $40 to $50 million a year for them and costing $100 million to make, to produce. And people try to make it into an issue because Colbert canceled or criticized the Trump settlement. Now, Fallon, when he took over the Tonight Show, NBC show, they were in first place clearly by a long stretch. Now they're in third place. Late Night with Seth Meyers struggles to hit a million viewers, and Colbert's numbers are continually eroding still. Now, this trade publication, the Hollywood Press, they're trying to frame it as, well, it's TikTok, it's YouTube, it's streaming, it's all this. They're taking our viewers. That's the collapse. It's not your content, which is an utter lie, because while they're right, they're using that as the full reason. The proof that they're lying, Greg Gutfeld, on cable, not free network television, is dominating, doing much better than they are, the three late night shows, outrating all three of them. This reminds me of Jay Leno. Attack half the country, lose half your audience. The press is protecting its ideological allies by blaming distribution. They're saying it's a distribution issue. Y'all got to get on social media more. They are on social media all over the place. Gutfeld's proving the format's not dead. It's just corrupted. His show is thriving on cable because it respects its audience. Colbert, Kimmel, and Myers turned comedy into nothing but progressive sermonizing. And we walked as viewers. I tried to give Fallon a chance, but I didn't care for his comedy. I thought it was weak. He was very pajama boyish to me. Regardless, the media's advice is ideological self-preservation. It's not strategy. Look, late night didn't collapse because of platforms. It collapsed because it stopped being funny to half the country. We don't tune in to be lectured. We tune in for wit, surprise, and what is the cultural push, pulse? non-politically. Instead of adapting, these hosts look to double down on the same smug monologues. And yes, the same partisan punchlines that made us walk. And now, the Hollywood press wants them to lean in even harder. That's not reinvention. It's ideological stubbornness. We've moved on. They haven't. And every time they double down, they simply show they're not listening. All right. Let's have an update here. Paramount's office mandate. It's a cultural reset or layoff pulls. So to Paramount and Skydance merge. And they have a new policy. It's return to office order. And the media's claiming it's not about collaboration. This is a corporate maneuver to thin the ranks before the pink slips drop. They're half right. Paramount Skydance issued a mandatory 5-day-a-week return to office policy for all employees. Now, the move follows the $8.4 billion merger with a stated goal of cutting $2 billion in costs. Internal sources are telling me, telling others, to expect layoffs to begin in early November, and the mandates are seen as a strategic pressure tactic. Employees privately describe the shift as a forced attrition and a precursor to mass firings. The media coverage frames the mandate as a cultural reset, avoiding the economic and human implications. Well, not the media coverage, but Skydance and Paramount, saying it's a cultural reset. And media coverage doesn't like that. And what's that mean? Ellison, the CEO, is framing the move as a cultural reset, and it's emphasizing in-person collaboration, creativity, and momentum. And I can tell you firsthand from having both what do they call the workers? Oh my God, I tried. Okay. My remote workers versus my workers in the office. In the office, that is true. You in-person collaboration, creativity, and momentum flow so much easier. It does not from remote work. It's zero, zilch, nada. Now, the press is complaining that corporate leadership is spinning these layoffs as cultural reform. And they're right in this sense. Paramount's hybrid reversal, it's a calculated move to trigger resignations and streamline severances. Return to the office, they claim Hollywood or the left that this is code for downsizing. It is, but they're not forcing it. Because what they're not saying is people don't want to come back, so they'll leave. But then they'll blame the company because they've chosen not to come back. They're making the choice not to come to the office, but they want to blame the company because they couldn't work from home, which many times are working dual jobs, three jobs, and they're not 100% productive. There's studies that have shown this. This is being done so when they come in, they have an option. Come in 5 days a week or not and quit. And what they're hoping will happen is most of these individuals will quit. And the left, the progressives, that's who are the loudest voices. We saw it with all the government firings. They didn't want to come back to work. It was funny. They came to the buildings to picket and protest, but would not come to work. Think about that. So Paramount's mandate isn't about layoffs. It's about standards. Ellison set the terms, full-time in-office work. Employees who opt out aren't being pushed out. They're self-selecting to leave a system that demands presence, collaboration, and accountability. They're leaving because they don't want to come into work. And he's right to do it. When people are in the office, work is more productive, more creative, and more efficient. I know that firsthand. I've seen that firsthand. I was part of the revolution in the mid-90s when I implemented this remote workers and in-house workers at my small business. The media, or rather, they're calling it a culture reset. Maybe it's a bit of a filter, filtering out those who don't want to come back and they filter themselves out. But regardless, in the post-merger landscape, clarity matters. Show up or step aside. Paramount isn't shrinking their workforce. They're actually refining it. And the ones who stay, they'll build faster, sharper, and with fewer excuses. All right. Woke's not dead. Victoria's Secret doubles down with transgender angel return. So Victoria's Secret continues its ideological pivot, spotlighting a transgender model in a 2025 runway show. Now, there's been years of backlash, and their brand has collapsed. Why? Because they are now a woke company and proud of it. And despite this collapsing brand, they haven't slowed down. So Alex Consani, a biological male who identifies as female, he returned as a Victoria's Secret angel. And what made this odd, weird, behind-the-scenes photos featuring a tucket used to conceal the male anatomy, the schlong. And it was celebrated on Instagram. He did. He called the moment the baddest group of girls. You're not a girl, bro. And he previously walked the runway in 2024 with another trans model, Valentino Sampaio. And he also won Model of the Year in 2024. See, that's what I find disgusting. You know, Victoria's Secret is supposed to celebrate women, biological women, and they purposely go look and give the Model of the Year to a man. Now, he's the real deal, 6 million TikTok followers. I mean, the media, as always, this is a progressive milestone. Victoria's Secret is not listening to their customers. For some reason, they want cultural validation, and that's fine. We have a choice where to shop. Stop shopping there, as millions of others have. Now, the brand once symbolized femininity and aspiration. Now, it's just a platform for gender ideology. It's not inclusion, it's erasure, people. Biological women are sidelined while corporations virtue signal. How? Performative casting. The tuck kit imagery, that's not empowering. It's a reminder of how far the brand has fallen and treated its core audience negatively. And again, that's their right, but it's not smart business. And again, it's why their brand has literally collapsed. A little bit of facts here. Operating income has plunged 34% year over year. And that's with their quarterly two reports this past year. Now, that's been despite a modest 3% sales bump. Year over year, 34% drop. Their direct channel, their e-commerce sales dropped 5%, flat traffic, declining conversion. So they're undermining their own digital strategy. And these numbers cut through the PR spin, and they reinforce our point, my point, the conservative point, ideological casting. That may be the right, but it's not translating into sustainable business. So while the media celebrates the movie's progress, the public has walked. Sales are down, as is relevance, and their trust with their core audience has cratered. Victoria's Secret market share, their U.S. market share in women's underwear has dropped from 27% in 2019 to 18% last year. And that's per Euromonitor data. Their competitors, they're woke, but with nuance. So the key difference is like brands like Skims, Aerie, Third Love, Evelyn and Bobby, and Warner's, they're winning market share because they're prioritizing comfort and aspirational identity and fit innovation. While Victoria's Secret chased ideological confrontation. So these competitors don't give conservatives a lot of choice, but at least they're not shoving their wokeness in front of us to denigrate and try to shame us. You take what you can, and in America, companies have a right to be woke, and we have a right not to purchase or buy into their nonsense. So look, Victoria's Secret was once a celebration of femininity. Now it's a billboard for gender politics. So by elevating a biological male as the face of female beauty, please. The brand isn't breaking barriers. It's breaking trust with its core audience, women and their femininity. This isn't about fashion. It's about ideology replacing identity and female gender. Look, conservatives warn that erasing women in the name of inclusion would backfire, and it has. Their U.S. market share has dropped, and their operating income has plunged. And until companies stop chasing applause and start respecting reality, they'll keep losing the audience they forgot they had. All right. Final topic before we get to that. My final show. For my, para mi Latinos, and to all conservatives, support America, which we Latinos are part of. A conservative Latino, we identify as Americans first, Latino second. But I love my shirt. ¿Quién es el más macho? El presidente Trump es el más macho. Oh, man. That's what that shirt says. ¿Quién es el más macho? Trump es el más macho. I'm going to get that retweet, the design. But support us. Support our volunteer project here. Again, you can swipe the QR code, go straight to our store, or you can go to grumbliesmedia.com. I'd love to see some images, some pics of you all sporting the shirt. All right, final topic of the night. It's an update. Sydney Sweeney's American Eagle campaign. The numbers are out, my friends. They are out. To remind you guys, activists tried to cancel the denim ad over wordplay and appearance, and we responded with sellouts and the stock surge that crushed the narrative. So what happened? American Eagle launched a summer campaign featuring Sydney Sweeney with the tagline, Sydney Sweeney has great genes. Now, critics claim the wordplay hinted at eugenics and objected to Sweeney being blonde and blue-eyed. So they're racist. They hate her because she's blonde and blue-eyed. If you are Asian, Latino, or black, and you don't like her because she's blonde and blue-eyed, that news for you people, that's racism. J.D. Vance and President Trump publicly defended the ad, and as I did and as everybody did, more than half the nation, conservative or apolitical, as absurd. American Eagle rightfully did not apologize. They stating the ad was, quote, always about the genes, unquote. Now, here's the news that came out. 700,000 new customers, 40 billion ad impressions. The Sydney jacket sold out in 24 hours. The Sydney jean sold out within a week. The stock jumped 25% in one day, triggering an $815 million swing in market value. And despite a slight revenue dip, net income rose and earnings beat expectations. So the media coverage focused on the backlash, downplaying the campaign's success. This which caused manufactured outrage. Activists tried to inject racial grievance into a denim ad. And the backlash targeted beauty, tradition, and femininity under the guise of equity. Or rather, not the backlash, but the naysayers, the haters, the leftists. They targeted beauty, tradition, and femininity under the guise of equity. American Eagle's refusal to bend, it shows that standing firm against cancel culture can be profitable. Now, this campaign resonated with Gen Z, not because of politics, but because of aspirational and authentic look. The media tried to frame the ad as problematic, but consumers crushed that narrative with their wallets. A quick note here. The following week, the progressive media, they started pushing Beyonce's Levi's campaign. Now, that did see a respectable 7% stock bump in its first week. But Sweeney's impact was worldwide, broad, and lasted. It's still ongoing. It was much deeper and more disruptive, both culturally and commercially. The campaign didn't just trend for a week and kind of peter off, as Levi's did. It moved the product. It shifted brand perception, and it redefined the audience alignment. The truth is, American Eagle's campaign with Sweeney likely wouldn't have dominated as it has in comparison to the Levi's with Beyonce if it had not been for this woke backlash. They both have their demos and have their fit in society. The difference was the hate and bigotry push onto Sweeney. And then when they started appraising Beyonce with faux bigotry and racism towards Sweeney, that's what triggered the backlash. They're like, no, there's nothing to do with this. And that's what pushed the sales and the stock and the company value through the roof. The media framed it as race and culture. And it was none of that. Americans of all cultures, we're done with that. And they showed it by going above and beyond for American Eagle and Sweeney. Beyonce got caught in the middle as progressives tried to use her against Sweeney. She didn't ask for this. Sadly, as always, we're pawns of these factions, and we need to rise above that. We need to unite to fight them as we're all Americans. We can have multiple winners, but Democrats and those with TDS, they want the hate to continue because of their own bigotry, racism, and insecurities. Look, people, the numbers are out. The Sweeney campaign proves what conservatives have long argued. Cancel culture is loud, but it's not deep. The outraged mob tried to turn a denim ad into a racial controversy, but the public, regardless of culture or color, wasn't buying it, literally and figuratively. American Eagle leaned into timeless style, ignored the noise, and reaped the rewards. Sweeney didn't just sell jeans. She exposed the limits of performative outrage and the media's obsession with this division that's destroying our country and our values. Beyonce's campaign had its moment, but she should never have been thrust into the middle of the battle. But that's what Democrat leftists do. That said, Sweeney's impact reveals something bigger. Americans are done being pawns in culture wars we never asked for. When brands stop apologizing and start trusting their audience, the results speak for themselves. We must unite as Americans. Why? Because unity beats grievance every time. And that's my show, and I hope you liked it. If you did, please make sure you hit like or thumbs up and share this podcast. Then bookmark grumliesmedia.com. Follow us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, eSpotify, and Pandora at Grumlies or under the profile Grumlies Media. And finally, don't forget to check out our new swag. We have shirts, cups, hats at grumliesmedia.com. Please support this all-volunteer project. We're small but smart, and we're growing slowly with your support. So please keep that up, my friends. Until next week, this is William Del Pilar for the Red, White, and Rude. Stay safe. Let me know your thoughts in the comments.